You believe he was targeted clearly. In this final minute, what is your demand even beyond Colombia?
Release Mohsen. Stop these deportations. Allow this new generation to continue having conversations, to continue meeting so that we can build a collective future for ourselves and for our children. What Mohsen represents is new. And new can be scary for some people, but new on both sides of this conflict is exactly what Israelis and Palestinians need to end the conflict and to create peace.
Josh Drew, I want to thank you for being with us. I know you're going to a peace conference in Geneva today. Safe flying. Josh is a student pursuing a Master of Science in Strategic Communications at Columbia University. We'll link to your piece in the foreword. As Israelis in New York were horrified by ICE's detention of one of our Palestinian partners in peace. This is Democracy Now! To see our video and audio podcast, to sign up for our daily digest, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Woronoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Willamette Week is seeking nominations for their annual Best of Portland Readers Poll. Show your support for KBOO by nominating us for Best Radio Station before noon on Friday, April 25th. Go to kboo.fm and click the Best of Portland banner to submit a nomination. Thank you for supporting your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.fm. Today is Monday, the 21st of April, 2025. It is 8.02 a.m. Pacific Time. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will be your host this morning. On airroom phone number is 503-231-8187. If you would like to chat and share, put it down, save that number, because you never know when you might need it to call. Certainly on this day, there are many things that are keeping our attention and things that we should focus on. While planning this program, I had several things to talk about and wanted to share with you, but of course, plans always change as life change. And certainly this morning, waking up and hearing the news, reading the news this morning, was struck first by the death of Pope Francis and what that means for the world. So we remember the life and legacy of that man, and certainly as the head of a powerful institution as the church, there are things you can say many ways, but among the things I think it's important to remember is that wherever we are, whoever we all have a place and a voice, and it is important to use it. Our voice and our actions mean a lot. So whether it's in symbolic gestures by which you demonstrate your empathy with those who are struggling and who are suffering, and advocating, such as Francis did in terms of advocating for migrants and speaking against war. Or perhaps you are someone who just said, oh, there's a group of people who are standing outside with signs. I will make a sign and stand on the corner as well. And I can spare 15 minutes to do that. So perhaps you were able to do that. I guess a point I'm making is that no matter who you are or how important you are in terms of the world stage, we all can make a difference. And certainly we saw the continuation of that, people making differences, certainly from Pope Francis speaking yesterday on Easter Sunday to thousands of people talking again about the importance of peace and the end to warfare. Or perhaps all the thousands of people and communities throughout this nation who stood in rallies this weekend denouncing the cruelty and the unconstitutional rule that the president's administration has going right now. And so whether you are able to speak to thousands of people from a balcony in Rome or stand on your street corner in your community, we all have voice and we all can make a difference. So how are you making a difference, and what are things that you are doing? A couple of things I would like to hear from those who participated in their communities this weekend in the rallies, and why or why not you participated in those rallies. Now, certainly we will hear know of people who said, I am unable to participate, or I don't want to because those actions do not help make progress, or they are meaningless, or they won't make a difference. Let's hear what people have to say, because I think it's important, whether you are young or old, regardless of where you live, as I said earlier, we all can make a difference and we all can have a voice and an ability to transform our society and our community. So, did you participate in rallies this weekend, April 19th, rallies that took place in many places? And why and what do you think are possible next steps in terms of resisting this regime, and what are things that people are doing to make that transformation possible? It is important to stand up and to welcome all different voices, because it is important to confront the challenges we face. So it is important to stand and to bring in voices or communities that you may not have worked with or that you find difficult. It is challenging to build community, and when so many people, so many communities are threatened, what is it that we need to say, and what is it that we need to do to transform our society, and more importantly, to change the trajectory of our nations and our government? So what is it, what are certain things we can do in terms of resisting the call to challenge the authoritarian rule of our national government? I said all of this because I came across an interesting opinion piece by David Brooks in the New York Times a few days ago, which it's entitled, "What's Happening is Not Normal. America Needs an Uprising That is Not Normal." Now, the headlines in itself certainly caught my attention because David Brooks is a respected conservative mainstream opinion writer who has written for decades, and often you read his writings or hear him in interviews on national media panels where he talks about his perspective. What caught my attention, again, was this column that he wrote, and was in the New York Times on, I believe, April 17th. And I'll just read parts of it because, yeah, there's probably a paywall. He says in part, he begins by saying, "In the beginning, there was agony. Under the empires of old, the strong did what they willed and the weak suffered and what they must. But over the centuries, people built the sinews of civilizations, constitutions to restrain power, international alliances to promote peace, legal systems to peacefully settle disputes, scientific institutions to cure diseases, news outlets to advance public understanding, charitable organizations to ease suffering, businesses to build wealth and spread prosperity, and university to preserve, transmit and advance the glories of our ways of life. These institutions will make our lives sweet, loving, and creative rather than nasty, brutish, and short." He goes on, and as time permits, I will read some of it, more of this article. But again, I challenge you, if you have access, to read it, because it, for me at least, it may be beginning of what does it mean to create a mass movement that include people from all walks of life. So how is it different? What would that look like? And in this article, he quotes nonviolent activist Chenoweth, and talking about how to coordinate and how to challenge the systems. And so it is fascinating, this article, and it ends this way, which also struck me. He says, "I'm really not a movement guy. I don't naturally march in demonstration or attend rallies that I'm not covering as a journalist, but this is what America needs right now. Trump is shackling the greatest institutions in American life. We have nothing to lose but our chains." David Brooks said that. Let's go to our first caller. Santiago, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm doing all right. How about you, Cecil?
I'm doing well. Hey, before you go on, I just read this last quote from David Brooks, and the last line in it says, "We have nothing to lose but our chains." And where do you think he got that from?
Well, number one, he got that from the Communist Manifesto, specifically Marx. But I would also say it's a weaponization of losing our chains, because the fact of the matter is Trump isn't shackling anything. Trump is a aberration of the ruling class that pays both him and their Democratic lackeys who are telling people to roll over and do nothing. So the real chain isn't Trump or whatever people perceive him to be doing in the White House. Because you could get rid of Trump and the system still functions as it's supposed to, maybe not in as brutal of a fashion, but it still functions in the same way that it has always functioned, in service of the ruling class. Mm-hmm. And the one thing, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Continue, please.
So part of what I did leading up to Saturday is I was given my first spot for a radio zine at KABU.
Yes.
And one of the things that I talked about was how the indivisible movement, from a national point of view, is deeply entrenched within the Democratic Party, and explaining that, you know, that they, that the people who started indivisible were very inspired or enchanted, if you will, by the Tea Party movement, which, as we all know, it popped up during the Obama administration and was perceived to have been like a grassroots movement from the Republican side, but then found out later that it was infused with huge amounts of money by the Koch brothers.
Yes.
Now, with Indivisible, when you look at their website, their nonprofit is broken up into two nonprofits. There's Indivisible Civics, which is a 501c3, and then there's Indivisible Project, which is a 501c4. 501c3s are completely transparent about who is giving and what is given. 501c4s, as of May 2020, they do not have to disclose donors of donors or donations of over $5,000 or more, or over $5,000, and 501c4s are connected to the ruling class because it's a way for them to be able to move money around without making them look like they're moving money around. Lots of people use them for donations that are heavily doled out in this current climate as a way to see them as like a philanthropist, but that money can sit in their accounts for years, but they get the write off as if it was given to someone. So, you know,
so how,
leading up to Saturday, go ahead.
No, it's going to as you tell us about Indivisible and your investigation in terms of how it operates. In terms of alternatives to Indivisible, because certainly, I certainly know that you don't think that that's the only game in town. But certainly they.
Absolutely.
So what do people do if they don't, you know, if they have this analysis and said, and you know, there's, you know, like I said, there were people on Saturday in towns across the United States just standing up with, you know, with homemade signs. Certainly they may have or may not have, you know, put $5 in an Indivisible, you know, donation or not, but you know, it's certainly they certainly have demonstrated that there's something going on in the nations of, for many communities who are displeased with the directions of our nation. And as you suggest, certainly if we remove Trump, the system remains. So how do people expand on their energy and their desire for change?
Well, what I tell everybody is we need to consciously remove ourselves from the vectors of education that continue to speak in terms of like, to speak in terms of America as a democracy, because America, for the vast majority of its life, has never been a democracy, except for those who could afford it. You know, as we're seeing now with Mahmoud Khalil and his Mohsen Madawi. You know, and this has been the norm. Because at the end of the day, the people, it doesn't matter if they're preaching violence or they're preaching peace. If the message involves getting in the way of money that is being made for the country, then they are removed.
Okay.
And that doesn't matter how much people like or dislike them.
Right.
It obviously makes it easier and more justifiable if people don't like them. But when you have people who are clearly committed to peace, but that peace would endanger a paycheck for the ruling class, he needs to go. They need to go.
Okay, there's a few callers behind you. I want to get them online too, but I appreciate what you're saying and urging us to think critically and to organize critically. I appreciate you. Do you have some final words?
Just one more thing.
Please.
I just want everybody to remember that the only democratic rights we have in this country that are worth saving were those paid for in blood by the most marginalized. And they didn't allow us to vote them. We moved as a people in the direction of them, and they had no choice but to respond. And those people who led those movements were not were not spurred on by their dream of what America is or what it should be. It was about the desires to help their people. And America eventually capitulated. We need to get away from that America's a democracy to America's an imperial power,
okay.
But we still need rights.
Okay, we got you. Thank you so much, Santiago. As LinkedIn News said, America has never been America to me. Let's go to Janet. You're listening to your community radio station here on KBOO. This is what? More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil. And now we have Janet. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was thinking about what we need to resurrect. It was compelling that Pope Francis was coming from the stream of the liberation theologist and Paulo Freire's idea about the peasants rising.
Yes.
And seriously, there's so many people out in the street, but they're mostly like upward middle class. And what I'm thinking about, not really no signs about the genocide, no signs about capitulation. And then even with all the Bernie and the AOC kind of yada, 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 really not wanting to hear anything from the people who are really struggling down under.
Yes.
So I think that it was potent that, I mean, I don't really quite get it, but the talk with J.D. Vance and the Pope, I don't know what was said, but it makes me think about Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. There was a switch where it kind of got real for a minute. So I think when push comes to shove, we need to see more than a bunch of signs and nice people talking like little things about how much eggs cost, which is pretty bad, but babies being burned alive is worse.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's important, and I think we need to keep both things on important. And I think what I'm hearing from you, you know, there's a pattern, you know, and maybe that, you know, that it's nice that people are standing out, you know, in the park with their signs, you know, if they have the time and the ability to take time off, but more things need to be done, and we have to that might be a wake-up moment for people, but we cannot leave it there. So as you and others have said, more work need to be done. But we need to move on to our next caller, Janet. I appreciate your call and your passion. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's hear from Tuasi. Good morning, Tuasi.
Hey there. You know, I really appreciate activism. I just want to start out by saying that because it's important. People need to get out there and speak out for whatever their cause is. Right now, it's really important to have collaborative activism.
Okay, collaborative activism.
So when we see anybody inside of our movements, whatever they are, trying to push away from one another, it's important to isolate those people, because there are people inside of your core group, probably your personal core group, who are confidential informants, that are working undercover to gather evidence. And just as an indigenous person, we've seen it over and over again. Recently, in the case of Red Fawn Fallis, her romantic partner was an FBI informant sent to gather evidence against her. So just immediately have a tight core group. Make sure whoever's in your group, you know who their family is, because if you know who their family is, they'll tell you if that person's an informant. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, because this is really important.
Yes.
I just want to mention a few names, and I'm going to ask for your response to these names. just to see if you if they mean anything to you. So first, Isaiah Jason Mazza. Does that name mean anything to you?
No.
Okay.
Tell me.
How about, okay, he was an activist that was stabbed in the chest after getting federal charges and his address being publicized. He's a kid. Mm. He's a kid. But he wanted a better world. How about T-Rex? Do you recognize that name?
Yes.
Does it mean anything to you?
Are you speaking to me personally? I'm just like hosting this panel here. T-Rex, you know, the activist here in Oregon. Yeah.
So your she point. Was shot
yeah.
to death because of her activism. So Deg, does that name mean anything to you?
So let's...
Okay, I'm just naming Portland activists who have been murdered.
Okay. And the list, you know, the list goes on for decades. We can go on in terms of activists not only in the last, you know, 10 years, but for decades who have been victims of arrests, of harassment, of killing by police and those forces tied up with them. And so a point that I'm getting from you is in terms of how this movement needs to continue, how we need to be aware of those who are in our circles, how we need to protect it, and also to educate ourselves and our communities about what's happening.
So I would just give one last action that anybody can take. It's really important. Join a gun club, whether it's a John Brown gun club, a Latino gun club, an LGBTQ gun club, a black gun club.
Okay, so you're advocating for, okay. Okay, I disagree, but, you know, that's how we are.
All of the dead activists.
Yeah, I just want to go on, and we can have a more conversation around this, but I want to hear some other callers behind you. I appreciate what you're saying, and I would certainly enjoy more conversations with you next time. So thank you so much, and thank you for lifting up those names and reminding us that the struggle involves real people who, because of their desire for freedom, lost their lives, and we are obligated to acknowledge them and to try to make the world better. Thank you so much. You are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our number is 503-231-8187. We've been talking about a variety of issues in terms of activism, where we are right now. Let's hear what Joe has to say. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. I was inspired to call in and respond to the prompt. I forget the exact wording of it, but it basically, in my memory, was... How do we support social change? How do we support activism in facing the challenges of facing down what is evil and wrong in the world? And there's too many facets to try and kind of capture that in any one kind of image or idea. So I want to like put forward a strategic point, which is that we think about power and social change in terms of structures and a structure of power. And that there is a base to our power as a community, as people, that has very much to do with how we literally survive, with how we literally provide for the material needs of ourselves and those around us. And that if we are going to change the world, we have to wrest that power to actually provide for ourselves from the systems that have tried to take that from us, the markets, the and capital. And that looks like creating mutual aid networks. That looks like creating share hubs in your neighborhood that, you know, can look like one-off examples of generosity, but it needs to look like us making available what people need that we have to share, including material resources, our capacities as people with skills or knowledge, and that this is there is no future without us recognizing that this is a garden that we have to maintain. We have to grow our own crops, literally in a certain big picture sense.
But yes,
that we need to look at this as an ongoing maintenance issue for our movement. The week before was National Library Week, and last year at that time, I produced a long program segment for the Old Mole Variety Hour on libraries as grammar schools of the commons. The enclosure of the commons, you know, a lot of people aware of history and leftists will, you know, recognize that as like this pivotal moment or period or process in the capture of human societies across the world by capital taking over our ability to provide for ourselves. And libraries right now and for, you know, many, many years have been under attack, as Mariam Kaba in that piece, you know, points out, because there is a material stake to the way that we look at our ability to provide for and share with one another what is actually abundant. And so that is my like strategic plug for like, we need to not just be showing up in the streets, but doing that. We need to be showing up, you know, on the street corner, not where there's a protest, but where there is someone in need, where there is a neighbor who is walking out and needs a cup of sugar, needs a lawnmower.
Yes.
And we need to be thinking of that as the basis of all of our power. Because when we aren't able to take care of ourselves, we become easy to control. Because if you can't get what you get, you start listening to the people who say they have what you need. And that's where strong men come from.
Thank you. Very wise advice. Thank you so much. We need to take care of one another, and we need to make sure that we are creating communities, community hubs where we support and transform our society. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and next we'll talk with Mike. Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
So, first of all, when you talk about community hubs, what are these, the outrage when the black community was being gentrified? And right now there's this big support for illegal migrants to come into the country, but this migration has affected the black community. So the black community has been hit upside the head with gentrification and now migration. And these people that's been out there protesting, they weren't protesting when black people was being ostracized and put in jail and all. They were quiet.
So who? Let me ask you, who was protesting, Mike, at those times when black people were being arrested and harassed?
Black people. Black people were being... They put dogs on us. They put water holes. They jailed black people. And there might have been fringe groups of whites, like I think the White Panthers or something like that. I remember them. But for the most part, white people was null and void when it came to the black struggle.
My point is that, and this might be similar to an earlier caller, is that we have to take care of ourselves because we can't depend on other people. Go ahead, Mike.
These other people are out in masses protesting for illegal migrants that come in, and when they come
Okay, I want you to finish. I want you to express yourself clearly when you say protesting for illegal migrants. Who are you talking about, and what is it that you understand they are protesting for?
Well, first of all, Oregon is a sanctuary city. You already know that. And what they're protesting is policies that that the current administration have in place where they want to deport people that's in the country illegally. And people come out, I think just 2 weeks
and,
in a row, they come out and...
I want to push back a little bit because on one sense it's sort of like, okay, protesting against people in the country illegally, which I think, you know, unless you indigenous, we all are. But also, I think a point I want you to think about and emphasize is, well, who is it that we are against? How do we build a better society? How do we do that, Mike?
Well, first of all, what you guys don't understand is that these people that fled into America from different parts of the world, a lot of them are racist. I have been called the N-word in recent years, not by Caucasians or anybody like that. I've been called the N-word by Hispanic people. So when these people fled into the country...
I want to hold you there because I want to challenge that. I acknowledge what you just said as true, but the words that you use, like people fled into the country, those are all words to rev people up. People are fleeing for all sorts of reasons why people come to this country. And more importantly, in terms of communities, who are people in your community, people all around you? When you look at that person at the supermarket, you don't know why they're here or where they're from. You just know that there's a mother and a child and they're looking for milk. How do we take care of our communities regardless of where people are from? And how do we resist these talking points of views of language like illegal migrants flooding into the country? I don't think it's very useful to get across, I think, a very valid point you're saying. What I'm hearing, your concern is you raised a point around gentrification. You raised a point around where are people when those who are most vulnerable under attack, they have been nowhere. I agree with you. And I think for me, the importance is how do we build alliances against all of us who feel that we are under threat rather than alienating or denigrating different communities. It's challenging.
Cecil.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Cecil, first of all, let's just take America for instance. Your fathers and your fathers' fathers' fathers, and you go back all the way to slavery, and even Caucasians that came in and founded and go all the way back to the Mayflower and all of that. These people build, their ancestors and everything build a legacy. And when people come in from all over the world, what they're doing is they're taking your birthright. I don't want to give up my birthright.
They don't take away your birthright.
Yes, they are, because they get Social Security.
No, they don't. They don't.
They get all the benefits.
Mike,
and
Mike.
They have not paid into the system.
Mike, you're wrong. I wanted to continue the conversation, but you just kept on going. And I want to challenge all of us, and myself included, to be careful about the language we use and how we say things, because it's important to try to communicate, make sure that people hear. So when people use words like illegal migrants and flooding into the country, it's for me personally, it raises my blood pressure because those type of words have been used against marginalized people in my community oftentimes. And so I think as we try to create a better society, we need to be as sensitive and for me, as inclusive as possible. Certainly, we all come from different areas. We have different life experiences. But how can we be respectful of different life experiences and gather together with communities that are different? The alienations that we find among ourselves is destructive to all of us. So every once in a while, I just have to stop, take a breath, and begin again. So maybe that's what I'm doing right now, stopping, taking a breath, and let's go to our next caller. Shay, good morning, Shay, and thank you for your patience and for me just blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, Cecil. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you to everybody that's called in for sharing your perspective. I wanted to take a moment to talk about the carceral system because from my perspective, the carceral system is really at the crux of so many of our problems because it's very difficult to organize effectively when the government has the power to lock you up. And what we're seeing right now with people who have come to this country being deported, specifically to the mega prison in El Salvador, which has been receiving a lot of media coverage, there's a lot of outrage about this particular prison, and I think that that is well-founded. And I really urge people to recognize the fact that prisons have been here the whole time, and they are a legacy of slavery, and they... How do I put this? I urge people to think more about having solidarity with prisoners because I think that it's something a lot of folks struggle with. I think that it goes overlooked a lot.
Yes.
I think that our beliefs, collectively, our beliefs and myths that we have been raised with around what it means to be guilty, what it means to be innocent, what it means to deserve incarceration, you know, I think that these are really deeply entrenched ideas that we must interrogate on a really rigorous scale and recognize that, you know, what's happening with migrants being sent to a mega prison where the conditions are particularly, you know, horrible, this is not exactly new. You know, we know that there have been detention facilities that migrants have been sent to where they, you know, are packed in tightly and they don't have beds and it's freezing and they're dying of diseases. This has been going on, you know, and I think that liberals in particular are very focused on, you know, the idea that Trump is responsible for all of this, and certainly there's an escalation right now. But it was Obama who expanded ESCOM, which required law enforcement on a state level to cooperate with ICE.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, I could go on and on, but really I just urge people to interrogate their beliefs about prisoners and prisons and read material about prison abolition and consider getting in touch with a prisoner or a few prisoners and try to see things from their point of view and try to understand that these concentration camps are a logical progression of the incarceration system that has always been here in this country. This
yes.
is something that we have to think about and we have to consider in the broader context. you know?
That's
the, what, so what, if the government has the power to lock you up, they have the power to lock you up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're raising such an important point. Now, if I'm just saying, okay, this is really important, I want to know more about the prison system or organizations that work into, you know, for abolition, where might you point someone who, you know, you caught their attention this morning? What might they do next?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Would you, you raised the point about the prison system. What might a person do to educate themselves or to work with other people looking for prison reform or abolition?
That's a great question, and I don't know if I'm the right person to provide resources around that.
Okay.
My best advice is to write a prisoner.
Okay.
And honestly.
How do I find a prisoner? Is it like a pen pal letter? Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, if you're thinking locally, if you go on the website for the Coffee Creek Institutional Facility,
okay,
there are links to pen pal pages for prisoners who are seeking pen pals. And, you know, you can look at their profiles and you can pick somebody.
Okay.
You know, that's my best advice. I don't know if I am aware or plugged in enough, but I do. I have someone who I love that's behind bars, and just keeping in touch has been the most illuminating thing, you know, because you're hearing directly from someone who's experiencing it, what it's like.
Right.
And you start to understand how alienating and isolating and ridiculous this system is. I mean, the amount of money that it costs to keep in touch with somebody, it's doable, but it's, you realize how just ridiculous the whole thing is.
Yeah, it
also, there's a Books for Prisoners program in this city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the link to their website, but I'm sure you can find it.
Right.
I think they might be maxed out on volunteers, but certainly you could start your own
program. Hey, thank you so much for raising the point and pointing us in the right directions, and how do we build community? So I appreciate your work and for calling in this morning. And you're listening to More Talk Radio. Our last caller was sharing the importance of maintaining community with those who are in prison, and things we can do to change our system and to create a better world. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. I'm Cecil. This is More Talk Radio, KBOO Radio. And next up, we will speak with Jeff, who's been waiting. Jeff, thank you for calling this morning.
Well, thank you, Cecil, for both this program and for taking my call. I am not a Catholic, but the Argentine Pope, who died in the last 24 hours, stood for some basic principles. And among them, I will paraphrase, because I am not a Bible study expert or a scriptural expert. But when I was naked, you clothed me. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was in prison, you visited me.
Those are Jesus' words from Matthew 25, yes.
And let us live by that.
Thank you. And that points us to what we were saying and sharing with earlier caller who talked about the prison system, and your reminder of building community. I appreciate your call, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will go to our next caller, Tangent. Good morning, Tangent.
Hi, Cecil and everyone. The caller before last was talking about the carceral system, and I was thinking about how these politicians are always, there's these phrases, and they're always cracking down on crime, yes? And it made me wonder one day, like, doesn't it ever get cracked? Does crime ever get cracked? But then So that's one thing. But on
and when does crack? What happens when does crack? Is it like an egg? Is it like a crack egg?
They crack a case.
Okay.
But anyway, point, my politician says that it's always cracking down on. It's not breaking down. Okay, so that's that. But the other thing was Christ said, "Beware of wolves in sheep's clothing." And it occurred to me a few years ago that all those Wall Street bankers and politicians, they all wear suits, and all those suits are made up 100% wool. There's real fine wool for summer, and there's really heavy wool for winter, but it's almost all of it's 100% wool.
Okay. Well, unless they're going to wear nothing, you have to wear something. So.
Sure.
And I don't think Wall Street bankers are going to wear polyester, so.
Well, I think there was a time.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Danjit. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. There's been many, many callers, and I appreciate all of you. Don't mean to, cut people off sometimes, but sometimes, like today when there have been callers on top of callers, I have to try to keep your remarks shorter than you intended to. And you may not feel as if you said everything you needed to say, and I'm sorry. But I hope that when you call, that you have the sense that you are heard, and that a point that you are making makes a difference. All of you who have called, who have shared many calls, many points, all around around the issue about how do we build a better society, recognizing that we are all under threat. Now, there might be disagreements. I had some disagreement with some callers about who's in the country, who's not in the country, where people are held in prison. I think a point I'm making is that we are all in this together, and we have to find ways to transform our society. One caller mentioned, when people protested, when black people protested, where were all those other people? And we know they weren't there because their lives weren't on the line. When people feel their lives are on the line, they stand up. When people feel their lives or the lives of loved ones are on the lines, they stand up. And if they don't, if other people don't join us, we have to do what we can do while we're here. Those are many things that's responsible, and so people are crying out. April 19th was 250th anniversary of that thing we learned in schools many, many years ago. Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, and April 19th is a recognition of people crying out against injustice. It was used as a basis to rally people together. On April 19th, this Saturday, on the 250th anniversary, people gathered in communities throughout the nations, following the example of Paul Revere and people like that who sang, "There's tyranny around, there's tyranny coming, we must stand up and do something against it." And so that is part of the challenge that we face and part of what we are doing to work to transform our society. What does that mean for all of us? Well, there are things we can do and efforts we can make to make a difference. And so just to recognize that, that there are things we can do and efforts we can make to make a difference, I want to acknowledge and thank those who worked so hard in months to petition and put pressure on the city council to stop an effort to destroy part of Forest Park here in Portland, the destruction And it was a reminder that people together can unite and make a transformation. So as we remember, think about, and prepare for Earth Day tomorrow, let us think about what are things that we can do that we are doing to transform our society. And we talk a lot on this radio program and on this radio station about the incoming, the continuing pressure and danger of this federal administration, and that people need to stand up, especially now when they're a way in which they organize themselves is a word that the president used all the time is drill, baby, drill. When our planet is literally on fire, we need to find ways to resist. So I would like to remind all of us, as an earlier caller said, talking about the prison system, we may not know all the answers, but we can begin to find ourselves and educate ourselves. So continue to do that in terms of how we not only resist this present administration in its many ways in which it is destroying our world, but particularly on Earth Day and Earth Week, what are things that we may do or we may continue to do to try to preserve the only planet we know we can live on? And, you know, I mentioned earlier, the billionaires might go to Mars, but for most of us, we don't have that money. We don't have that money to take joyrides up to space for 15 minutes and come back down. We have to survive on this planet that we have. What is it that we need to do? How are we organizing ourselves? There are many things we can do. There are many organizations we can participate in. And so continue to do that work that is so important and building community and building a new world that includes people from many different walks of life that creates a world for all of us. You have been listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. For those of you who are able, I encourage you to continue to support KBOO and non-commercial radio by offering your offerings, by participating, becoming a community member with whatever you have to offer, by becoming a member of this community. Media is under threat, as many institutions are, and we need to continue to support independent media as the administration continue to put down a strong arm and try to control access to information. We need to continue to allow and find spaces where people can speak out. And community radio is one of those places. So thank you all for continuing to support KBOO. Stay tuned to more radio programming. Up next is the Old Mo Variety Hour, if you're listening live on this day, the 21st of April. It is 8:57 a.m. in the morning. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you so much for joining in. Forgive me for the times when I have failed to understand your point correctly. Have patience with me. I'm learning this. Hey, be kind to one another and continue to make a better world. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I will speak with you next time. Oh,
This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on April 22nd at 10 a.m. for Rockin' Out with DJ Fluorite, a part of KBOO's special Earth Day programming. This program is dedicated to geology in honor of Earth Day,